Proverbs 4, verse 23, keep your heart with all diligence. The heart thus recovered out of its lost state must be kept and well looked to, that it fall not back again. Now I will show you what it is to keep the heart, or how it must be kept. Number one, it must be kept under government. Two, it must be kept under guard. First, it must be kept under government. Here I shall show the necessity of keeping the heart under government. Number two, how the heart must be governed. The necessity of keeping the heart under government. This will appear by considering what a heart is. And because the heart is recovered in part, and there is much of its old and original depravity remaining in it, which will be apt to boil up and break forth again, I shall a little open the wretched temper and disposition of it, which will evidence how great a necessity there is to keep it under government. By nature it is a wicked, mischievous heart, desperately wicked, Jeremiah 17, verse 9, very wickedness, Psalm 5, 9, enmity against God, Romans 8, 7. It is the fountain whence all the filthy streams that pollute and defile our lives flow and are cast forth. It is the furnace whence all the noisome fume and smoke that annoy the world are sent forth. It is the nest where cockatrice eggs are hatched. It is a sink that gathers in all manner of filth and then sends it abroad to do mischief. His heart gathers iniquity to itself. As the sinks gather in all the filth of the town, and when he goes abroad he tells it, Psalm 41:6. Only there is this difference between this and other sinks. Other sinks gather in the filth, but it is an order to the conveying and carrying it away. Into this evil sink of the heart all the filth is gathered, and there it stops and stinks and casts itself back in its annoying streams. Out of the heart come evil thoughts, murders, adulteries, and so on. Matthew 15, verse 19. All this filth and mud, all this wickedness and malignity, as it naturally dwells in every heart, so there is much of it remaining even in renewed hearts. And if there be not constant care to keep it down and cast it out, it will rise and swell and work up again in them. Christians, you may thank God that there is salt cast into those filthy fountains for the healing these muddy waters, that there is a spring of living waters broken in your hearts to drain out your dirt, that there is grace begotten in you to resist and repel the contagion of lust. But this little grace will be choked up again if lust be not kept under. And as it is a wicked, so it is a mischievous heart. It is set upon mischief. Wickedness will be doing wickedly. All it is said of the workers of iniquity, so it is true of all as far as they are unrenewed. Mischief is in their hearts. Psalm 28, verse 3. There is the same reason for keeping our hearts under restraint as for keeping madmen in. They will be doing mischief if they have liberty. Besides the mischief that our evil hearts will be doing to others, they will be injuring themselves. Madmen will tear their own flesh, will cut and wound themselves if they are let alone. And there is no such danger of evil hearts as in regard of that mischief they do themselves. Our evil heart will hinder us from doing good to ourselves, or of receiving or laying up good for ourselves. The good that I would not, I do not. Romans 7, verse 19. Why? What hinders it? Verse 21. I find a law, the law of sin in the heart. When I would do good, evil is present with me. The flesh lusts against the spirit so that we cannot do the things that we would. Galatians 5, 17. Sometimes good counsel is given us from the Lord, but we do not take it. How many good counsels have you heard from the ministry of the word that are lost and forgotten and come to nothing? Sometimes a good motion comes into the heart to repent and mend our ways, to pray or to meditate or to search our hearts, to cease from this earth and flesh, from serving our sense and minding only the present, and to lay up treasure in heaven and provide for the time to come. Have you never such emotions? Do you never hear such a voice within you? Following reading is taken from a book called Instructions About Heart Work. Richard Elaine. Get yourself bags that don't wax old, a treasure in heaven that fails not. Choose the good part. Lay hold on eternal life. Give yourself to praying. Keep a good conscience. Take heed and beware of covetousness. Use more diligence. Live with more heedfulness. Have your conversation in heaven and keep yourself unspotted from the world. Keep yourself in the love of God. Set the Lord always before your eyes. Behold his face in righteousness. Study to show yourself approved of God and to walk so in all things that you may be accepted of God. Are there not such motions as these that come into your hearts? You that are Christians, sure you have many such good motions. But how do they take? What do they bring forth? If you would obey all the good motions that you have sometimes felt within you, oh, what a manner of Christians would you have been? What mortified, what circumspect, what raised and heavenly-minded Christians had you been? But how do the good motions take? What success are they attended with? Do not you see that they are often strangled in the birth and die away and come to just nothing? Or at least, do you not merely halt and trifle in the pursuance of them? If you pray or hear or set your hearts to humble yourselves before the Lord, how are you distracted and diverted and deadened and all your duties spoiled in the doing, so that you can have a little comfort or real advantage by what you do? Do you not often mourn over your prayers and sermons and Sabbaths as merely lost to you? When you would work upon your hearts heavenward and fix them above, when you would love and delight yourselves in the Lord and solace yourselves in the contemplation of the divine love and goodness, when you would fain set your hearts to live a godly, conscientious, circumspect, self-denying life, and comfort yourselves with such thoughts, I hope I shall never live such a careless, carnal, useless, unsavory, earthly life again. I hope you have many such thoughts, desires, hopes, and aims. You are lamentable Christians if you have not. But how do they succeed? What do they bring forth? Do they not often prove abortive and bring forth nothing? May it not be said of you as of those? They conceive mischief and bring forth vanity or a lie, Job 15:35. May it not be said of you, I have conceived truth, conceived good. I have had many hopeful conceptions, and yet at last I bring forth a lie. I am utterly frustrated and disappointed of all my good hopes, desires, and aims. But how comes this to pass that you are thus disappointed, that your desires don't succeed, that your labors don't prosper, that you are brought to no better pass? Oh, it is your evil hearts that hinder you. When you would do good, evil is present with you, so that you cannot do the good that you would. It is that evil law in your members, that evil heart that does you all this mischief, despoils all your prayers, that distracts all your holy meditations, that breaks all your holy purposes, that defeats and frustrates all your good designs for a more holy and fruitful life. This heart is that which hinders you, that you cannot do as you would. You cannot pray as you would, nor hear as you would, nor live as you would. And thus it will serve you as long as you live, if you do not get those evil hearts in tow and keep them in better order. Secondly, it tempts and turns us aside after that which is evil, as our hearts hinder us in that which is good, so they betray us and entice us and tempt us to that which is nothing. Every man, when he is tempted, is drawn away by his own lust, his heart's lust, and enticed, James 1:14. You that have given up your names to Christ and count yourselves the people of God, sometimes turn aside after the lusts and the ways of the world, and instead of having your conversation in heaven, live as men that are written in the earth. Mind earthly things, follow a worldly, greedy life, and like those who, after they have escaped the pollutions of the world through the knowledge of the Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, are again entangled therein and overcome. 2 Peter 2:20. Are there none of you professors with whom it is thus? Has not the world returned upon you? The love of the world and the cares of the world and the inordinate minding and following of the world? Are none of you again entangled by the world, encumbered by the world, and even overcome of those encumbrances? It would make a tender heart shake and bleed to consider how sadly this worldly mind and life has grown upon professors and has eaten out the very heart and life of their religion. Oh, how many like Demas are there among the followers of Christ that have forsaken him and embraced his present world? Christians, in the name of the Lord, I warn you, I charge you before God and his holy angels to consider if it be thus with any of you. Is it thus with you? How comes this to pass? This is a mischief that your own heart has done you. Their heart goes after their covetousness. They hear the word. You are unto them as a very lovely song of one that has a pleasant voice, Ezekiel 33, verses 31 and 32. They will hear a good minister. They seem to love a good sermon. The doctrines of God and his gospel, the doctrines of Christ and his redemption, and the most enlivening and affectionate discourses of the righteousness, holiness, kindness, compassion of God in Christ, and of the hopes and joys of his saints. These have a pleasant sound to them. They are taken with and pleased at the hearing of them. But for all this, they are gone. They have embraced this present world. Their hearts are gone after their covetousness. And as some men's hearts carry them after their covetousness, so other hearts carry them after their vain company, others after their slothfulness, others after their carnal pleasures. Their hearts have tempted them, and by their hearts' lusts they are thus drawn aside and enticed. Consider these two sorts of mischief men's hearts do them. Their heart hinders them from what is good, and tempts and carries them away after that which is evil. And then you will understand what a necessity there is that such mischievous hearts should be carefully kept under government. But secondly, it is an unruly heart. It is said concerning the tongue, it is an unruly evil, James 3:8. But whence is the unruliness of the tongue but from the unruliness of the heart? It is a heart that is the lord of misrule. He that rules his spirit is better than he that taketh a city, Proverbs 16:32. There is need of more wisdom, of more watchfulness, of more care and skill to rule the heart than to rule a whole city or country. Governors of kingdoms do not find it so hard to rule their numerous people as to govern their own hearts. To show the unruliness of the heart, I shall instance one, the thoughts of the heart. Who can rule his own thoughts? Who is there that has such command of them that can think of nothing but what he should think of? What rovings and stragglings and wanderings are there of the thoughts? The eyes of a fool or thoughts are in the ends of the earth, Proverbs 17, verse 24, running about everywhere to sin, to vanity, to impertinencies. Consider yourselves in your praying or hearing or in any of the most serious and important exercises of religion. Your thoughts, then, most especially, should be composed and fixed, should be fixed on God, should be all giving their attendance upon the work of God. Those most weighty things, the eternal things that you are dealing about, should take up all your thoughts. But how do we find it at such times? What distraction and wandering and running of our thoughts do we then find? We cannot hold ourselves in to think what we should pray for, to attend on what we hear. And this is the great reason of the deadness of heart in prayer, of the inefficacy and unfruitfulness of our hearing. We that preach to you should have more hope of success upon you, if we could but fix your hearts and get you to think more intently on what we speak. But when the thoughts are gadding, we may to as good a purpose speak to stones as to souls. How is it with you now? And how does it used to be with you when you come to the worship of God? Where have your thoughts been since you came here? How many things have you been thinking of that you should not? And maybe your thoughts have been at home all this while, or abroad in the fields, upon your business, or upon your pleasures, or you know not where. Who are there of us that do use to gird up the loins of our minds and to keep them close to the work we are upon? And whither do your thoughts run at other times? How little room is there left for the thoughts of God, or of our souls, or of the things eternal? Amongst those crowds and swarms of worldly thoughts, of wicked and vile thoughts, of vain and impertinent thoughts, which are still thronging in upon us. These evil thoughts are not only from the suggestion of the devil, or from that variety of objects that we have before us, from what we see or hear, but are also the streamings of a corrupt heart, as out of a boiling pot of filthy liquor, or out of a reeking dunghill. There arise stinking and noisome steams and smells, so naturally doth a corrupt heart steam up into the head, and fill it with vile thoughts and imaginations, And therefore the cure that is prescribed for these evil thoughts is the cleansing of the heart from wickedness. O Jerusalem, wash your heart from wickedness. How long shall vain thoughts lodge within you? Jeremiah 4:14. Get your heart washed from its wickedness, and that is the best way to free yourself from ungodly thoughts. We have many complaints of vain thoughts or disturbing and distracting imaginations, and we hear people asking often, how shall I be rid of these evil thoughts? Woe is me, what wandering, roving, distracted thoughts I have, so that I can never have comfort in anything I do. But man, consider you are under a worse disease, the unmortified lust of your heart, from whence these thoughts arise. Can you bear the lusts of your heart, the pride and frowardness and worldliness of your heart? Can you complain of your thoughts and not complain of your lusts? One unmortified lust has more mischief in it than 100 evil thoughts. Your duty is to complain more of your naughty heart, your naughty disposition and inclination, and to get these changed, which is the best way to cure you of evil thoughts. I say it is the best cure. Get you better hearts. Wash your heart from those evil lusts that dwell in them. If you would get rid of worldly thoughts, purge out worldly lusts. If you would be rid of proud thoughts, get the pride of your heart slain. Get you an humble heart, which is the best cure of proud imaginations. If you would be free from vain thoughts, light and impertinent and useless thoughts, get cured of the vanity of your spirits. Be serious. Get a heart more intent upon serious things, and that will discharge you of such runagate and vagabond thoughts. It is seldom that people complain of distracting or vain thoughts, but there is a worse disease from whence they arise that they take no notice of. Have you a vain, trifling heart? Are you not in good earnest in your religion? Are you not sensible of the weight and importance of your everlasting concerns? You have an unmortified heart, unmortified lust in your heart. You love the world and love your pleasures and lust after your ease and your carnal delights. Your heart sits too loose from God and the things of God. You are not powerfully and resolvedly bent for the blessedness to come. Your heart is not yet fixed upon Christ and Christianity. This is a worse disease than evil thoughts, though that be bad enough and the very root from whence they arise. Do not therefore inquire barely, how shall I be freed from evil thoughts? But chiefly, how may I get my lusts subdued? How may I purge out those evil dispositions and desires? How may I get my heart more intently fixed on God and things above? Get that done, and your evil thoughts will quickly fall. Number one, in the passions of your heart. We have unruly thoughts and unruly passions. There is an unruliness in all our affections. Who can love and fear and desire and grieve for nothing but what he should? What he should fear and desire. What we should not fear, we fear. And what we should fear, we cannot. What we should love, we cannot. And what we should not love, we set our hearts upon. We cannot raise up good desires in our hearts, nor keep down evil. There is an unruliness in all of our affections, but especially the passion of anger and wrath. When this breaks forth, what rude and brutish and wild creatures we become. Like a roaring lion or a raging bear, like a bear robbed of her whelps, such as a man in his rage to those that stand in his way. The breaking forth of rage is as a breaking forth of fire in a house. How much water must there be to quench it? This unruliness of spirit the whole world abounds with proofs of. Every country, every city, nay, but few families are there whom experience does not teach what an unruly thing the rage of the heart of man is. And is there not a necessity of keeping such a heart under government, of governing the thoughts and governing the passions and unruly affections? The necessity of government upon the account of the unruliness of our thoughts and passions will appear if we consider that our eternal state is highly concerned in our thoughts and passions. For first, these are the instruments by which men work out their own salvation or damnation. Second, these are evidences of what we are in respect of our eternal state. These are instruments by which men work out their own salvation or damnation. Holy thoughts, holy affections set us a working out our salvation, the exercising of our thoughts upon God, upon eternity, upon the blessedness to come, and upon the wrath to come, the exercising of our affections, the keeping ourselves in hope of the salvation of God, the keeping ourselves in fear of the reprobation of God, the maintaining desires after God and his salvation. These all will be as so many cords to hold us in, as so many strings to put us on in the way of salvation. Christians and desiring Christians will be working Christians. I thought on my ways and turned my feet to your testimonies. Psalm 119, verse 59. Every man that has this hope in him purifies himself even as he is pure. 1 John 3, verse 3. Work out your own salvation with fear and trembling. Philippians 2, verse 12. Fear a miscarriage. Fear falling short. Fear to be damned. And this will set you a working out your salvation. Men will not worry because they do not desire, because they do not fear. Men do not desire or fear because they will not think. Think more of God. Think oftener of what it is to be saved, what it is to be damned. Think much thus, and this will stir up your desires and fears. Desire more the salvation of God. Fear more his indignation and wrath, and this will set you to work out your salvation and to secure yourselves from falling into condemnation. His good thoughts and well-ordered affections will set us working out our salvation. So by evil thoughts and unruly affections, men work out their damnation. Unruly thoughts, disorderly affections in the soul are as crosswinds or as storms or tempests upon the sea. How can a mariner ever arrive at haven when the wind is contrary? And what kindness do tempests to him but to dash him against the rocks and drown him in the deep? Ungoverned thoughts and passions in the heart are like mutineers in an army. What would an enemy desire more than to have the army he was to fight against in a state of mutiny amongst themselves? The devil will not doubt his conquest while he can but keep all within you in disorder. Men's damnation frequently begins in thoughts. Evil thoughts corrupt the affections. Evil affections corrupt the manners and practice. And evil works have their end in destruction. Never again make a light thing of thoughts. How many men are there who, by giving themselves leave to be thinking of their pleasures and thinking of their gains and thinking of their lascivious, lustful objects, think themselves into very beasts at first and then into devils? I made a covenant with mine eyes. Why then should I think upon a maid? Job 31, verse 1. The next to looking is thinking. The eyes let in fuel for the thoughts. The next to thinking is lusting. Thoughts provide fuel for lust. The next to lusting is whoring. The next to whoring is death, and the like in other cases. For the world, the next to thinking is loving. The next to loving is lusting and inordinate desiring. The next to lusting is seeking and progging. The next to seeking is getting and heaping up and loading ourselves with thick clay, and the next to this is sinking and drowning ourselves in perdition and destruction. Second, these are the evidences of what we are in respect to our eternal state. Men may judge themselves and come to know themselves by the thoughts and affections. To be carnally minded is death, but to be spiritually minded is life and peace. They that are after the flesh mind the things of the flesh, but they that are after the Spirit, the things of the Spirit. Romans 8, 5 and 6. Where are you, friend? Are you in the way of life or in the way of death? Why, how may I tell that? Why, where are your minds? What are they running upon? Where are your thoughts, your most serious and delightful thoughts? Are they in heaven or on earth? On things spiritual or on things carnal? Where are your affections, working upwards or downwards? Such as your thoughts and affections are such as the state of your soul. To be carnally minded is death, but to be spiritually minded is life and peace. It is true many serious Christians have too many carnal thoughts, vain and wandering thoughts, but it is their affliction and it is their care and endeavor to give check to such thoughts. But when the allowed stream runs towards earth and sin, it is a sign that you are an earthly, fleshly man and in the state of the dead. Next, there are idols set up in the heart, after which, if it be not looked well after, is like to go a-whoring. It is true, more or less of all, what is said to the elders of Israel. These men have set up their idols in their heart. Ezekiel 14, verse 3. Whatsoever the heart loves more than God, whatever the heart serves or seeks more than God, yet whatever the heart loves or serves or seeks ultimately for itself with respect to any higher end, this is an idol set up in the heart. those very men that abhor those idols that are set up in the house or the church, that detest saint worship or image worship, the worshiping of stocks or stones or pictures, the works of men's hands, yea, that call that an idol or idolatry, which God never calls so, they cry out, idolatry, idolatry, against everything that is not according to their own minds. Even these very men may have set up their idols in their hearts. The heart has a multitude of idols set up in it. There are in the hearts, as the apostle said, there are in the world gods many and lords many. 1 Corinthians 8:5. The world is an idol. Some men make their lands and their money their gods. Though Job would not, chapter 31:24, yet some men's hearts will say to their gold, you are my God. Others there are who make their belly their God, whose God is their belly, Philippians 3:19. Others make their honors and their pleasures their God. And these may be said to be those who are lovers of pleasure more than lovers of God, 2 Timothy 3:4. The heart has many idols set up in it. But the great heart idol to which all the rest must stoop and serve is self. The world is served. Honors are sought. Pleasures are loved, but all for the sake of self. Whatever idol there be, the great idol is self, which is set up in the room of God. Man's original apostasy was his falling from God to self, and man's recovery to Christ is his being brought back from self to God. Therefore he tells the world that whoso will come along with him and be his disciple must deny himself.